101.5 FM in...
Okay, so here we are, back again on Talk Back. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Good afternoon. With me, Michael G. Haskins, who is my sound engineer, and you are on or busy telephones at 212-209-2900. We ask only that you keep an open mind and that you be prepared to challenge conventional wisdom. Thank you very much for calling. Good afternoon. You are on the air.
Happy New Year.
Thank you very much, and a Happy New Year to you.
Thank you to both of you, and also Happy New Year to all that are not there, and to all activists everywhere in the world, because they're keeping something in balance for us.
Okay.
Okay, now, Hugh, because I don't know you too much,
Okay.
Do you have an answering machine, or you know, one of those machines that people can call to leave a message on?
Oh, sure. You can call me at 212-788-7286.
7286.
And right. You can leave word there for me. That's until I get a new voicemail at this station. Okay?
Oh, is that a voicemail?
Yes, that's voicemail.
Oh, great. I have other stuff here. Are you union or non-union member?
Why do you ask me that?
I'm just curious, because I just don't know. I don't know you.
Oh, well, that's quite all right. I'm not about this afternoon to discuss my status, union, non-union, any of that. I'm not going to do that.
Curious.
Well, that's quite all right. If you call and leave word for me on my voicemail, I'd be more than happy to discuss that. But really, I think it is of little interest to the general listener out there whether I'm union, non-union. Is there an issue that you would like to address, please?
Yes, there
Let's
is.
Let's do that. Please go straight ahead.
Okay, now... I know some changes are going on there, and I don't want to get into that.
No, you don't.
But there is a survey that I would like WBAI to do, or actually anybody, any company this would be good for, because I heard that the National Board is putting out a 500,000 for focus groups, and it's just three simple questions. What do you like the, and I'd love to have this appear on that WBA Save Pacifica.net, that one.
Okay, let's hear the survey.
And also maybe on the phone. What do you like the most about WBAI?
Right.
What do you like the least about WBAI?
Uh-huh.
And what would you like to see changed? And instead of $500,000, listeners could do this, you know, very easily.
Okay, well, I will certainly convey that to the management of WBAI, and I'd like to thank you very much for calling. Please keep listening. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air. Okay, sorry we missed that one. Good afternoon. You are on the air. This is Talk Back.
Yes, good evening, Hugh.
Yes.
Excuse me. Yes, I'm calling up to make a brief comment on a very critical situation that is going on in New York City. This is containing to, in regards to chattel slavery that's going on in New York City with the welfare wet workers sweeping the streets with sanitation. That's worse than the slavery going on in the Sudan and Mauritania, Africa. Plus 300 million black people is being enslaved in India as we speak.
Okay, now let's focus on this one at a time. You're comparing the web worker situation to slavery. Do you have any personal experience with the web worker system or arrangement?
No, you know, it's just a problem that, you know, that none of the elected officials, you know, are talking about it, you know.
Is that really true? I happen to know that there have been several hearings on this issue. And by the way, for the uninitiated, the WEP program, the Work Experience Program, is one which seeks to provide, at least on paper, some opportunity for persons who receive public assistance to gain some kind of work experience, experience in the workforce, so that they may be better qualified to move into the private sector, perhaps, with jobs of their own. Now, that's on paper. As a practical matter, though, as you are pointing out, sir, it doesn't quite work that way, and you have a situation in which people are being forced into labor situations that are at the very least uncomfortable, and in many instances, a labor situation that does nobody any good, neither the worker nor the agency for which the person is working.
Yeah, but there's no Jews, no Irish, no Italians, or no Asians sweeping the streets working for their money.
That's well, I have not.
That's because they've gotten reparations for their so-called Holocaust.
No, I think that you're obviously straying from the point. I think you started to make a good point. I have not done a survey of the ethnicity of those persons who are WEP workers and who are sweeping the streets. What I do know is that the WEP program has been roundly criticized by the New York City Council's General Welfare Committee. I know that hearings are held on a regular basis, and perhaps if you have an interest in this area, you should try to contact the General Welfare Committee of the City Council to find out when they have hearings coming up on this issue again. And if you know of anyone who is a WEP worker or has had an awkward or untoward experience with that particular program, you might want to encourage that person to testify at such a hearing. Thank you for the call. Please keep listening. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air.
Oh, yes. This is Peter from Hollis.
Oh, hello, Peter.
I'm addressing your first issue about the cellular phone in the car.
Yes, sir.
Sir, I'm not used to you, but I'm getting used to you. You seem like a great man. And I'd like to sort of address it, not as an expert, but my personal humane opinion.
Yes.
I think that if a surgeon is operating on somebody, he could be playing music, but he can't be kissing the nurse while he's doing it. If a person is on the phone and there is a child, either in his car or another adult or himself, or there's a child that he can endanger by hitting another car, he commits child neglect, child abuse, by possible crash while he's on this phone. Now, driving is a thing that needs complete concentration. And I don't think there's any reason in the world if we did it without it for 50 years, why it can't wait, and these people on the bus that are saying I'll be home, honey, in 2 minutes and stuff like that, can't wait till they get there. Especially when you're driving a car. I think it endangers the population, yourself, and the people do it while their children are in the car. They should have their children put in foster care for being on the phone because they are, if they get into a crash because they have neglected their child.
Is there any circumstance in which you think it is permissible for someone to use such a device, a handheld cell phone, while driving? Any circumstance?
Yes. If you're a doctor, a surgeon, going to an emergency at a hospital, attending to a patient, not even a lawyer, a doctor where there is a life at stake, because certainly when you're driving a car, it takes all the concentration you need.
How about the use of hands-free devices? Would you be inclined to agree with the use of hands-free devices?
Well, that is one step less egregious, but I think where do we stop there? If you or I were a policeman, or someone on the air was a policeman, and we saw someone fondling their girlfriend while trying to drive a car, I won't go into any kind of words like descriptions like fellatio or anything like that, which people have done. Do they deserve to drive the car? I mean, where do we stop? I mean, people are getting serviced by their lover while driving in the car. Should we ban that? Yes, we should. You are driving a car. You are in charge of a $3,000 to $4,000 bullet missile.
Okay.
Absolutely, unless you're a surgeon going to an operation where somebody needs open heart surgery, you should absolutely not be allowed, even hands-free, to do anything but drive that car if I am the person that you may hit and kill, or a child, or anybody.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Peter. Please keep listening. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air. Good afternoon. Okay, we missed one. Good afternoon. You're on the air. This is Talk Back.
Yeah, good afternoon. You?
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, this is Shabazz in the Bronx. I wanted to make a comment about that police statement, because if I was a policeman on the world stage and I saw the great Satan, or as I call it, slave master's children, doing the things that they're doing around here in what you call America, I mean, how am I supposed to react? Am I supposed to react by saying, okay, you have a nation of people here being oppressed every day, daily?
What are we talking about?
We're talking about some of these politicians you seem to be agreeable with that are black, and in my estimate, they can go for themselves. They don't need to be referring to somebody that's not going to help them.
Now, No, hold a second. Could you refer to whatever it was that I might have said that would... I'm trying to find where the nexus is between what you're saying and what has gone before. I'm not objecting to the idea of you introducing a new topic of discussion, but I'm missing
just,
something
sir,
here.
Sir, it's just the whole attitude towards reflecting on this idea. You know, it's not
on which idea
in a sense, because I can understand it's quite the majority of you. But it's just the idea that this voting system and this government is going to have some way of helping.
Sir, I think that somewhere in your mind there is the germ of an idea forming, but it has not yet developed. And so when it does, please feel free to give us a call again. Until that time, keep listening. Thank you. Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hamilton. I wanted to discuss your comments about Ashcroft for
yes.
Attorney General. You had said that you weren't sure if his stand on the right of women to abortions was an issue.
Whether it should be used as a litmus test.
As a litmus test. Well, I wanted to say about that in the past number of years, women who are entering clinics, health clinics, for any number of reasons, including to have abortions, as you probably know, are routinely accosted and harangued and screamed murderer at, et cetera, by numbers of religious people who believe that they shouldn't have the right to make those choices. And in the past few years, some very important legislation has been passed, which basically limits the right of people to try to stop women from having their legal rights. And the Attorney General is entrusted with enforcing those laws. And that is why it is of great importance to the pro-choice community that somebody who is as vehemently anti-choice as this Attorney General, this potential Attorney General is, shouldn't be in that position. That's why there's a great deal of concern. So I think that is a very important issue in whether this man's nomination is approved or not.
Okay, I think that you make a very sound point there. Are there any issues you feel which fall within the purview of the law and which the Attorney General might be called upon to enforce as Attorney General, which should be excluded as litmus tests in that procedure, in the process of selecting an Attorney General?
That should be excluded as litmus tests? Well, I really hadn't thought of it in that way. I would say generally that an Attorney General should enforce the law impartially. I'd say that, and I'd say issues of racism are very important in judging a potential Attorney General, because that will obviously get in the way of his impartiality, as well as issues such as the one I was describing and any other. If the man is, for instance, if he's very anti-gay, is another example, which he probably is, because that usually is part of the constellation of right-wing beliefs. We don't know if he's going to vigorously pursue people who bash gays, and there's been a rash of killings across the country. So I think that his extreme right-wing persuasion is a great concern to progressive people and people fighting oppressions of various groups.
Yes, you see, I'm inclined to agree with you, but here's why I ask the question. Almost anyone who has a record of public service or some record in the public spotlight would have, by virtue of being a human being, certain convictions, one way or the other, on various issues. And once you're in the public spotlight, those convictions, no doubt, from at one time or another, would have become a matter of public record. So the question in my mind is there some degree to which we need to separate a person's convictions, personal views on various issues, from his or her ability to enforce the law, regardless of whether that law conflicts with his or her convictions as expressed? For example, is it possible for a governor or for someone who is, say, what do you call them? Oh boy, words fail me here. The district attorney. Now, if one is a district attorney in the state of New York, and one is prosecuting a case in which the death penalty is an option, would it be reasonable to expect that someone who is opposed to the death penalty as an individual might nevertheless be fair in the prosecution of a case where the death penalty is an option and would seek the death penalty? In other words, the person's professional work would not be compromised by his or her personal belief.
Uh-huh.
Do you see that as a factor in any of this?
You're painting sort of a best of all possible world scenario, but what I would say is that there is a reason why the Bush people have appointed somebody with such virulent anti-choice views and such a bad record on civil rights to this position. That man is expected to carry out certain ideological beliefs and desires on the part of the right wing. As a matter of fact, it's been speculated that Bush, this is a kind of payoff time to the right wing for Bush, for their support by some of these appointments, that he kind of played it down. He played down the so-called cultural issues and many other issues in the campaign, and in return, the right wing is getting some appointments. So I would say that you have to look at why this man is being appointed and what he is expected to do. And I think it's a very educated guess to say that he is expected to act in a way that would be to the disadvantage of those who are pro-choice and would be to the disadvantage of the rights of black people, etc. And I think that is the canny analysis that tells you what is going to happen.
Okay, I think you've made some very good points. Thank you very much for the call, and please keep listening and call again.
All right.
Good afternoon. This is Talk Back, and you are on the air. Good afternoon. Hello? Hello, good afternoon. This is Talk Back. Hello, yes.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you.
Hamid from Long Island.
Yes, what's your name?
Hamid.
Oh, Hamid from Long Island.
Yeah.
Hello, Hamid. Good afternoon.
C-SPAN had this live coverage of a meeting this morning conducted by Center for Constitutional Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Daniels had this meeting organized, and he invited a lot of people, including Al Sharpton. And they were all talking about this National Day of Resistance. Did you see?
No, I did not see that. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us about it briefly and indicate? Yes.
Utrecht has had Reverend Al a number of times on the program, so it might not be a bad idea to have him.
Okay.
Either live or by phone. He would be able to give a lot more information on this. It's on January 20th, and a lot of people are planning to do a lot of different types of activities.
And where do you stand on this?
Well, I'm going to be there.
Oh, okay. So I take it that you would like people to be aware of this and to participate.
Definitely.
Okay. And the purpose of your participation would be what?
Just to register my protest that this so-called election wasn't fair, and he really did not get elected into this thing. He was chosen by the court, so he definitely doesn't have a mandate.
And in your mind, what would be a reasonable measurement of success? What is it that you hope this activity would achieve that would make you happy?
Well, I'm really pessimistic, so it's very hard to make me happy. But as long as people show up, they show their emotions, they show their beliefs, and they put out a clear signal out there that this is just the beginning. And as almost everybody who was in that panel mentioned over and over and again, this is just the beginning. And we have to show them that this is not over. This election was not fair by any stretch of the imagination. And this is just the beginning. So we have 4 years of hardcore activism on our hand, and we better get ready.
Okay, Hamid, thank you very much for calling. Please keep listening and tell your friends.
Can I mention one more thing?
Okay, yes, briefly.
Very fast. This Saturday at 12, there's also a demonstration in front of the station.
In front of this station?
This station.
Okay.
So if anybody hears this and could come, it would be really great. Saturday at 12.
Okay, Hamid.
Have a good one.
Thank you very much. You too. Good afternoon. This is TalkBack. You are on the air. Hello. Good afternoon. This is TalkBack. And you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, yes. About Sunday, on the radio, on another station, they said that they had a Lucrece on, LIB, and they had Bernard White on. And I was just wondering, I didn't hear about one of the treasons on, but when Bono was on, Maddox, United African Movement, he was asking questions like he was a lawyer, like he was not impartial.
Now, you say that this program was aired on another station?
Right.
Okay, did you hear it?
Yes.
Okay, I did not. So there's nothing that I can do to contribute to anything that you might want to say on that particular issue. And
okay.
Anything that you say to me would be hearsay. So tell you what, keep listening, and please do call again. Good afternoon. This is TalkBack.
Hello, Mr. Hamilton. This is Jeff. How are you?
Oh, very well. Thank you, Jeff.
Good. I want to compliment you first on your cool, calm, collected, eloquent style.
Thank you, sir.
I want to compliment you on the idea of all of us attempting to move forward in this difficult time. And I think that you have hit the nail on the head. Above and beyond these internal problems, and I don't mean to underplay them at all, we are faced with some serious situations in terms of who this next president is nominating. You know, I am a political junkie, as you can say. And as the interim station manager knows from personal experience with me, I happen to be a American presidency, particularly Lincoln, studier and semi-scholar. And looking at the big picture, my idea and thought about Mr. Ashcroft is the following. I would think that it is not going to behoove the Democrats to move too vehemently against this nomination for the following reason. I think that there will be a move to hold out for, let us say, bigger carrots down the road. I think that in terms of political logic and realism, it is too early in the game to put one's self on the line past a certain degree. I think that if one chooses to enter the game of politics and devote one's life to it, that ramifications come into play, that cause and effect come into play.
Hold a second. You said it's a little too early, and there might be a move to hold out for some... I don't remember your exact words.
Well, in other words,
I take it you mean
Democrat, from a Democrat point of view.
Yeah, right. And what might that position be that is bigger?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, I'm not implying that they have Plan A, Plan B, and C, and that they're going to hold back on A to get B and C. Although, I mean, there are a lot of new members going to the Senate, as we know this January. What I'm saying is that to position oneself instantly against a new administration in such a short time span, you will find, looking at American political history, is very, very unusual. And I think that we have to remember this. I think that when people say, well, you know, they're going to take the Democrats to task for this in terms of grilling the nominee for attorney general or how vehemently they're going to go against him. At the end of the day, Mr. Hamilton, I think that we have to keep a hold of firm reality.
And that reality is?
That you don't get rid of your... you hold out, you do the waltz a little bit, and then you go for what your agenda is, because once, particularly in the Senate and in the body politics, once you are marked for having a certain position or outlook, and I'm not saying that this is the right thing, I'm saying that this is the realistic view.
Okay,
once,
well...
But once you're too early in the game as an opposing force, it tends to shadow anything else that may happen or that you may want to deal with down the road. Now, this is
okay. Hold a second. What I'd love to do, you've made a number of statements which I'd like to test, mm-hmm. but time is against
mm-hmm.
us
sure,
on this one.
Sure, sure.
So what I'll have to do is you have the last word in the next 15 seconds, okay? And mm-hmm. please do call again, because I'd really like to test some of the assertions that you made. 15 seconds and counting
okay.
now.
I would love to. I don't want us to be prepared for a fight that may not, in fact, take place. And I don't want us to put ourselves in a false sense of optimism. And that is what I would say. However, knowing that, knowing the big picture always helps you to get there at some point.
Okay, Jeff, thank you very much
thank
for the call.
Mr.
Please
Hamilton.
Keep listening and please call again. This is WBAI. We're going to take a break at the top of the hour, and we'll return after that with your calls to 212-209-2900. Please make a note of that. For those of you who are holding, please be patient, and thank you very much for your enthusiastic response. My name is Hugh Hamilton. Sitting in with me, Mr. Michael G. Haskins. You're listening to Talk Back on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, where it is now 4 o'clock.